It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Beam.
All right, a good Monday morning to y'all. Welcome into the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn, and we are so pleased for you to join us here on a Monday. Another week of shows planned for you. Hopefully, some fine horse racing entertainment. A busy weekend. We're going to recap that here in just a little bit. Gino Bucola from TVG and now Elite Racing Network is going to join us on the show today. Gino, a very popular guy out in the social media world. He was kind of the young kid at TVG for a long time, and now ventured out to do this this new production they're doing, Elite Racing Network. And we'll talk with Gino not only about his career and about Elite Racing Network and his time at TVG, but also about some of the action we saw this weekend. In fact, why don't we get the action from this weekend started? It's my pick three.
Welcome.
Let's go.
It's time for the pick three.
Three, two, one.
Discussing Jason's top three stories of the week.
All right, it's a pick three time, and we're going to start off at the fairgrounds down in beautiful New Orleans. We talked a lot about the Risen Star Stakes, as it was kind of the only Kentucky Derby prep going on this weekend. In fact, the next few weeks, it seems like there's just kind of one point race per weekend. And this was also the second week of our Kentucky Derby trail promo here at Bet America. Be sure to go to betamerica.com/extra and check out that Derby prep promotion. Essentially, if you have a win ticket on whoever wins the prep, if that horse comes back in the Kentucky Derby, you'll get a win ticket on him in the Kentucky Derby. So let's go to our friend at Bar and guest John G. Dooley. Here's the final half mile or so of the Risen Star Stakes from Fairgrounds this past Saturday.
Then Tom's Ready Wide, looking to move up between horses, is Arrow Force, but being driven to three furlongs from home. Holding the rail is Forevermo. We come back to Unter Walter with Inequality. Then further back to Zapparini, and Mo Thomas still 11th, half mile 46 and 1/5 seconds. It's Candy My Boy as they turn for home. Candy My Boy at the quarter pole. Here comes Gunrunner, who descends now on Candy My Boy. Forever Mo is next. Then toward the inside, Mo Tom had a check sharply. And back of the fading Bistrea. Final furlong, Gunrunner just leads. Candy My Boy toward the inside. Then Forever Mo. And Mo Tom is fourth. Tom's Ready well back. It's Gunrunner. Gunrunner, here's Forever Mo. Gunrunner, another today for Florent Giroux. Gunrunner holds Forever Mo and the Risen Star. Mo Tom was third, and Candy My Boy finished fourth.
So Gunrunner picking up the victory in the Risen Star Stakes. We had Michael Baychok on the show on Friday, and that was who he was going toward. In fact, Gunrunner was kind of not even the wise guy play. You know, the wise guy play is always the horse that's like 10-1 or 8-1 that everybody seems to be on. But Gunrunner at 5-1. But it seemed like everybody was on this horse. Almost everybody I talked to was throwing out Air Force, who was the 8-5 favorite. It didn't run a jump. I mean, he was 8th early on and had to only beat one horse, and that was Uncle Walter. But I didn't seem like anybody was on him. A fair amount of people were playing Mo Tom, who just had a disastrous trip down on the inside. Didn't have a disastrous trip, just had a disastrous moment at the 3/16th pole where he kind of had to check really, really sharply off horses there. And I think that cost him any chance of winning. But he was rolling pretty good. And it was a day where horses weren't necessarily coming from off the pace very well at Fairgrounds. So I don't think Mo Tom didn't lose a lot in this third place finish, at least for me. I was pleasantly surprised with his, or not surprised, but pleased with his effort under jockey Corey Lannery. You know, he was coming off a win in the LeCompte Stakes. The horse he had beat, his stablemate Forever Mo, was also running on late at 40-1 and just missed by half a length behind Gunrunner. Gunrunner was, you know, he was certainly getting tired at the end there. So I think a lot of people might, you know, give the stamp on him that, you know, he's not going to go on with more and more distance. But I thought it was a heady ride by Florent Giroux, who kind of put him into the race early down the backstretch. He got him into second going to the half-mile pole. And I thought that made a big difference because he kind of got first run on a lot of these other horses. And then when Mo Tom had that trouble, you know, that kind of basically shot his chances for the win. But I still think Mo Tom at least for me, is the horse coming out of Louisiana right now as we go toward the Louisiana Derby. Of course, somebody very well could ship somebody else in. But nonetheless, I thought it was a pretty good run by Gunrunner. But Mo Tom for me is kind of the horse that's moving on. So that's the first of our pick three. Pick three, we talk about my three most interesting stories of the week. So let's move on to number two. It was the debut of Zaconic.
The straight, Delmore begins to run into it, can't remember, and still back at the rear is Iconic. They turn and straighten up for the run in. One more round is the front runner. Coming up on the outside, Adios Reality trying to claim it. And down the outside, Delmore's made a quick run at them. Fast Money between horses. Delmar, Fast Money go up on the outside of one more round. It's Delmar the outside. Fast Money goes with it strongly. Fast Money over on the inside lifting. Delmore tries to go with us. Iconic down the outside, but Fast Money races away. Second, Delmore and Iconic close very quickly for third. They were followed by one more round. Next in, Adios Reality. Well back was Snicker.
So Zaconic's much ballyhooed debut ends in a third place finish. But I think what got everybody so excited. So if you don't know Zaconic, I mean, I don't know if you're listening to the show, you probably have to know. But Zaconic was Zenyatta's son, and so obviously racing in the massive shadow of his mom, who's one of the most popular fillies of all time. And Zaconic broke dead last, was really slow out of the gate, and then was even slower down the backstretch. And everybody was kind of, her other son, Cosmic One, hasn't really been much of a runner either. And I think everybody was like, oh no, it's another bad Zenyatta pull. And as they kind of ran on the turn, Zaconic started to make a move down on the inside, was gathering up some ground. Gary Stevens, to me, didn't look like he was, by any means trying to get 100% out of this horse. I think it was, they just wanted kind of a learning experience for Zaconic, and he kicked him out to the outside. He was making up ground down the home stretch. In the race call there, Craig Evans, who's auditioning this weekend, he didn't really mention Zaconic down the lane, but that was who everybody was looking at, and just kind of kept grinding away. And the reaction afterwards, I think everybody was just really excited that there's a Zenyatta offspring who might have a hint of ability. He got a 65 buyer speed figure, which, doesn't put you in the hunt for the Kentucky Derby, let alone a stakes race, anywhere in California. But I think it was something to build off. And to me, I know it's annoying when people get so worked up about the offspring of certain horses, but I do think it's kind of cool if this horse can go on and be a little bit of a runner. I just think it would be a cool thing for racing. And it's, the afterwards everybody's like, oh, when this horse goes two turns and stretches out. Ella Starr from Equibase had mentioned, one of the most overrated angles is closing sprinters stretching out. They just don't have that same kick. And he said, mark my words, he won't win. I remember I took a screenshot of the picture because if the horse wins, I want to remind him about it. But nonetheless, I think it was a positive debut. I think it was a positive day for racing out at Santa Anita. And I think for the whole Zenyatta fan club, which is still huge. I mean, the horse was trending nationally after a third place finish. It was just bananas how much talk there was about Zaconic after that race. But it was a really nice performance. And I think it's just a cool thing for racing. Somebody on Twitter had said, oh, that was a very Zenyatta-like third-place finish. And I replied to the guy, I said, there's no such thing as a Zenyatta-like third-place finish because she never did it, is this horse mom? No, I think it's just crazy for anybody to expect that because mom was an absolute stone-cold superstar. I think people should just enjoy it for what it is. It was a nice, promising debut, and hopefully in a few weeks we'll get to see this horse stretched out in a maiden event going two turns, and if he can pick up the late ground like Mom did, he'll be just fine. So Zaconic, the second story of a week. The third story, I'm not going to play the replay because it was no good. It was down at Gulfstream Park, and it was kind of more of a debate that was happening after this that I wanted to talk about. So the stakes race on Saturday at Gulfstream, there was a real nasty spill in the stretch. Horse in the front end went down, and then it kind of created a topple effect where three or four more horses went down. Joel Rosario was injured. Rafael Hernandez, I believe, was one of the riders involved. And immediately after the race, Gulfstream elected not to show the replay. And then I just looked the replay up just to see if they put it up, like on BetAmerica and Twin Spires and wherever else you watch replays. And it was up and you could view it. And the debate kind of started, Jeremy Balin from Bloodhorse, who we had on, had said, it's awful. It sucks, but we still should see the replay. There's a variety of reasons. You know, handicappers want to see it. Handicappers want to see who had trouble. Handicappers want to know who didn't, because they're going to be looking at that race going forward. And then other people were like, you shouldn't show incidents where horses and jockeys are hurt. It's bad form. It's bad taste. If that was your horse, would you want it to be shown? And I thought about that, and I said, the answer I would say that if it was my horse was I would want it to be shown. I just wouldn't want to watch it. Just because I don't want to watch it doesn't mean that the handicappers and bettors, who make the game go round and whose hard-earned money is studied, is spent by studying the races and handicapping them. Luke Kreitboss, who I have great reverence for, the great announcer who's passed away, since, he used to tell me that his solution for this was simple. He goes, you play the replay once and you play the head on once, just like you would every other race. You don't sit and show it like the stewards reviewing it. You don't need to do that, but just show the race once and show the head on once. And then, that's it. I remember when, and I know that the last name was Radosovich, it's the writer at Beulah Park who died a few years ago. I remember that replay wasn't put up, and I started having this kind of moral equivalency because I was like, well, yeah, of course, the guy died. But then I thought about it, if a horse is fatally injured, does that, why would I then lobby for that to be okay to be shown? And so, I think it's just a discussion that we can continue to have. I'd be real curious to hear everybody's thoughts out there. You can always email me, barn@betamerica.com, or find me on Twitter @BeamyAwards. Great place to catch up with me there. So that's our pick three, though, our three top stories of the week. There was a few other stories I could have had. I could have talked to, but there was a lot of conversation about the gentleman, Craig Evans, who's trying out at Santa Anita. I've got an email out to Craig to hopefully get him on the show, as well as David Fitzgerald, who's the other caller who's coming in next weekend, the Saturday and Sunday next weekend, to call the races from Santa Anita. I imagine a two-day tryout has got to be kind of tough. I don't know Craig Evans' calls. To me, he sounded like maybe he was a little bit under the weather, and I don't know if, traveling internationally, obviously, is not the greatest thing on somebody's health, but, if we do get to interview him, I'll ask him about that, but I got to think that a two-day pinch-hit kind of event at Santa Anita like that is supremely tough. I mean, there's a lot of pressure. You're competing for a fantastic job and all that, but, you're coming to new surroundings, a new country. I don't know if Singapore, if they run the opposite direction. I mean, and that's a little bit of my international ignorance, not knowing that. But I'd be real curious to talk to him and David, who's coming over next weekend, about how do you prepare for an event like that? Because I've done like one-off race calls or, like up at Emerald Downs called three or four races in a row on a couple of occasions. And it's just you're not in your comfort zone, and it's different sight lines. It's different window. It's everything. And it's a tough thing to do. So kudos to them for A, getting the opportunity to do it, and B, taking the opportunity and doing their best. So hopefully we'll get to hear from those guys coming up a little bit this week. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk with Gino Bucola from Elite Racing Network, formerly from TVG, a fantastic guy. I love talking to Gino. He's a big wrestling fan too. So there's a chance that toward the end, I'll try to keep the wrestling stuff toward the end if we do talk about it. So maybe I'll play like a wrestling alert noise or something, so you guys know, non-wrestling fans know to check out when me and Gino go into full geek mode. But we'll talk to Gino after this short time out. It's the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn.
Hello, this is Kayla Strah, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, welcome back into the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn, and we are pleased to go down to Southern California and welcome in a host and analyst for the Elite Racing Network. But before I welcome him in, Gino Bucola is one of my few guests that gets his own entry music. Because he's the ultimate handicapper.
Oh, yeah.
Gino, how are you, man?
Doing great. That's one thing that we've done so far early on in the Elite Racing Network is I always can get a few minutes, at least a minute or two, to pick all of our guys' brains about wrestling. It seems like a lot of the guys enjoy wrestling or have fun just kind of talking with me for a minute or two about some of the things they remember from when they used to. So always got to have some fun, man. Nice to be here with you.
In fact, I teased before the commercial break, before we came here, I said, just so you know, me and Gino might talk a little wrestling. I said, but we'll try to keep it toward the end. But what I realized was I always do the shows the night before and post them in the morning. And the fact that you're doing this interview with me while a WWE pay-per-view is going on, it shows you.
It shows you how much I like you. There's very few people that I would pause Fastlane for to come have a conversation with. So I put the Laker games on pause right now, too. It was at halftime, and we got Fastlane on the other TV on pause. So I figured, no problem. I'll come talk with you for a little bit.
Gino, I think the Bet America listeners should – they don't realize it. Because now you have to stay off Twitter. You can't.
Oh, now, exactly. No Twitter. Can't look at Facebook. Can't even look at my text messages because one of my friends or somebody will send me something on Twitter. Did you see what happened or do this? Yeah. So I like to be surprised. I'll sit and wait for a while.
That's one of the worst things with Twitter being so fast now. Like I was watching racing online the other day, but my connection was real slow, so it started getting behind a little bit. And I forget which race it might have been, the Risen Star, but it was like, you know, I'm on Twitter and everybody's like, "Oh my god!" I'm like, "They're not even in the gate. What are you guys talking about?" And really, especially with Twitter, you can't miss stuff in real time, or you'll get it spoiled for you on there.
I saw the. As we're talking about wrestling before we transition over from racing, but the new announcer for WWE, he was tweeting some of what's going on while he's watching the show, which SmackDown they tape a couple days in advance, mm-hmm. and people were getting mad at him for tweeting the results. He's just telling them, stay off Twitter. You know, just don't look at Twitter if you don't want to know what's going on. But that's what's great. We all have to know instantly now. Yeah. We have to. The things have changed so much in the last 10 years of social media.
Gino Bucola joining us. Now, I got to ask you before I start, is it Bucola or Bucola?
Yeah, Bucola's fine. Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
I just want to make sure I'm saying it right. You know, sometimes guys with tough last names, I mean, like, I feel bad for you because you probably go through like your whole life with people saying it wrong.
Gino Nicola Bucola.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a great
Gino Bucola Jr. Yeah.
One of my all-time favorite ones, I was in Cincinnati working at River Downs, and I went to this Italian place called Scotty's all the time, and the guy that owned it was named Marco DeMarco, and I thought that was just one of the great Italian names of all time.
I think we used to say, Simon and I used to say, it's not a name, it's an attitude. Gino Nicola Bucola.
Speaking of Simon, have you talked to Simon Bray? I know he's in kind of a tough battle right now, and he always struck me. I met him once, and he couldn't have been sweeter. And he kind of went out of his way to be nice, you know, when he didn't have to. And I know he's battling.
He's a good dude.
Yeah. And have you talked to him much lately? Because I know he's battling multiple myeloma right now.
Not a ton, but every now and then I've had the chance to. I know he was going through some of his more difficult stuff now because he was gone for a little while. But what happened with him initially is he had a back problem, so he had to recover from the back surgery before he could get any of his treatment started. Mm-hmm. It kind of was a freak thing that by hurting his back, they actually found out what had happened, so it was almost a blessing in disguise for him. So I know that he was kind of in the more difficult time from like the new year on, where he was almost in quarantine type thing, where you're in kind of solitude, you can't have a lot of people visiting you because your blood cells and your blood count is so low that if you come across anyone who's got any kind of sickness or something, you can attract that and makes it more difficult for you to get back quickly. So he's been going through one of the more difficult times as of late, but one of the harder times. But he's been getting through this stuff. It's amazing. It really is pretty crazy, because I went through all this myself and in just a different fashion. Just 15, 20, 30 years ago, we were in such bad shape when you heard the word cancer, you know, and when you hear that word. Nowadays, we're a lot better off in just how you can treat it, how you can approach it. I never got a good prognosis at all. They never gave me a, hey, maybe at this time or maybe at this point, and then boom, quickly it just as quickly as I got mine, it kind of went the other way. So, from everything that I've heard, Simon's been doing really, really well. I try to touch base with Mike Joyce a little bit too, who's an in-law of his, and kind of see how he's doing through him. So, it seems like he's been doing great from day one. He's really responded. I think that's the key to a lot of the treatment.
Yeah, you know, my uncle Mel, who was a baseball player with the Yankees back in the day, Mel Stottlemyre, but he has multiple myeloma, and he's 73 now, and he's survived, I think he's had 10 years since his diagnosis, and he's still doing pretty good. And his doctors have said one of the keys was staying in really good physical shape, which I know Simon works out like a fiend. So that was kind of, when I first heard that, my initial hope was that, you know, this is a guy who's in really good shape, who, if anything, is going to be up for a battle.
And with the young ones coming in now for him too, he's got a lot more incentive too. He's got a lot, you know, a lot coming through with being a father now. And he's a good guy. He's genuine. He laughs, and when you can hear it in his laugh, you know, that's how I know a lot of people when they're genuine. He enjoys the races. He enjoys talking about the races, trying to teach people little things that he's learned from being a trainer and being involved. And yeah, I really had a blast working with him. We made each other laugh quite a bit.
Well, Gino, we'll talk a little bit about the TVG days a little bit later, but you're starting a new venture. You're working in a new venture called Elite Racing Network. And my question is, like, first of all, how did you get started with this? And you know, tell us just a little bit about the network.
Basically, you know, we are a group of people, handicappers. I myself have been at TVG for a while. Corey Black's Corey Black's been a jockey, and he's galloping horses now, but he's trained some horses too. He's been an agent. He's really done a lot of things, and he's an all-time great. And then Louis Masry, who's the CEO, and Danny Wolf, they came up with the idea for Elite Racing Network. It's just a bunch of people who love to talk about the races, who play the races, and we have a good group of professional handicappers that come in. And we start on Saturday and Sunday morning. We stream live from about 8:30 a.m. Pacific time till the end of the racing at Santa Anita and Golden Gate. And as we lead up to all of the races, we break them down for you. We start, and honestly, probably the best time to tune into our show is the first hour of every morning, because we'll do an interview or two. Yesterday we had Norman Cassie on. We've had some really good interviews so far. Baltus, Phil D'Amato, Mike Smith, Joe Talmo, Maldonado, and we get them on. Talk to them. What's nice is that we're not rushed. We're able to get people on kind of early. It's kind of like the way you do things, and we can sit them down for, instead of a 30-second interview, yeah, more like a 5-10-minute interview, really get to some of the horses that they have for each day, or some of the big horses that they're riding or training. And in that first 30 minutes to an hour, we get 3 or 4 different professional handicappers that come on. They give out all their best bets of the day, and then we get to break down all the races as they come through. We'll go through Gulfstream, Aqueduct, Santa Anita, Fairgrounds, really wherever there's a big day, we'll focus in. And it's just a group of people who love to talk about the races. It's really good background noise on a Saturday and Sunday when, you know, most of us who sit down, nowadays a lot of us don't even go to races anymore. We sit at home and yeah, so we can watch and do so much. We can flip it on the background while you're getting your handicapping done, while you're putting your tickets together. And maybe one guy mentions a 20-to-1 shot, or one gal will mention a horse that's working well in the morning. And that's kind of, I think, the best way to use it is you don't have to always bet everything that everybody says, but you can get some good information. And, you know, with Bruno DiGiulio, who's one of the better clockers out there, you get to see all these horses training. He'll tell us how, you know, Gun Runner's progressing, and he'll tell us about Aero Force in the morning, and just all these good 3-year-old prospects that we're curious about. So it's just good information. It really is. I learn a ton. When Bruno comes on and starts talking, like, we all think we all have such a big ego. We think we know so much, and then you hear from someone who has a completely different perspective as you, and you realize how little you know.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned it, like, you know, kind of leave it on in the background. When I watched it, I kind of thought of it as more of just hanging out and talking handicapping and the horses than like a traditional TV racing broadcast.
You know what it is? It's really low key. You know what we do is we don't show any of the races live yet. We're new, so more than anything, they wanted to get us a following, and we're really working on a lot of things. We're working on partners with, you know, they want to partner with the betting site and just different sponsorship deals. But more than anything, we just wanted to get people to the site so we can, you know, we can show them. We have a really good group of professional handicappers. A lot of people that I just kind of knew from Twitter and didn't know at all. I've never had conversations more than how you interact online, and you don't know, you know, and when you sit down and talk to some of these people, we have them Skype in, and I'll drop some names for you. Some of the people that we kind of talk to each and every day, we have John Mooney, John Stetton, John DeSilva, a couple of really good professional handicappers. They all have websites that you can check out. We speak with Brandon Stoppel and Bruno DiGiulio. Brandon works, has done a lot of work with Bruno as a clocker. Angela Herman from over at Canterbury. She's just a great, great job. She does the on-track handicapping over there. I think she, the first, like, five shifts that she came on with us. Every time she came on, she gave out a winning pick four. And, you know, we have Dan Cronin, who's another one who's just incredible when it comes to the racing over at Turfway. He and Keeley, he knows it well. So we've got a really, really stacked crew over at Elite Racing Network. And all of them come on with us for 10 or 15 minutes every morning. They give out three or four best bets, or they'll kind of talk through a pick five. And it's so interesting to me to see how different handicappers approach the same races and just the different angles and the different ways now with all the information that we have.
Gino Bucola joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. Gino, how'd you get into racing? Was your family involved in the backside or gamblers? How were you introduced to the sport?
Yeah, you know, my mom and dad, both of their parents, my grandpas played the races a little bit. My mom and dad actually met each other at Santa Anita. My mom worked when she was only 17, she was not supposed to be working. She was selling the digest out front. She was still a senior in high school at Temple City. And my dad would come in every day, and you know how that's for most of the girls at the racetrack. They'd probably get wooed and whistled at and hollered at, you know, 15, 20 times a day. So he'd come in every day. He'd ask her to go out on a date, and she'd kind of roll her eyes and say, oh, maybe sometime. And they had a horse that my dad and my grandpa owned. They'd been waiting for a few months to run. And he came up to my mom that day, and he bet a $50 to win ticket for her. And he went down. He said, "We're waiting for this horse to run for a long time. He's going to win today, and you're going to come out of the date with me later on tonight." And the horse won. And my dad and my grandpa, they all made, you know, one of their best days of their life, 20,000, 30,000. That was back before there were even any pick fours and pick fives and stuff like that. You know, they're hitting wins and exacta straight and all sorts of different things. But she went on the. She went on a date with him later that night, and the rest is history. So, it's in the blood for me.
Oh man, that's smooth, Gino. I took a girl to the track one time for a date, and she was a barrel racer and real into that aspect of horsemanship, and had never been to the horse races before. And so we get there. This is Emerald Downs, and the first race. We go down to the paddock, and she goes, "Oh, you can't bet that three. Look at his behind ends off." Da, 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 da. And I look, it's the 4-5 favorite. And I go, "Okay." And she goes, "And you can't bet the one, and you can't bet the seven. They don't look good." So, I boxed four of the other horses and hit a try for $500. And I told her, I was like, "I need you to marry me and come to the track with me every day." And by the third race, she's like, "I'm kind of over this." And I'm like, no. I said, "The pick four's coming up."
I said, with guys like us, you got to know right away if those ladies can tolerate the races or not, because it's there's going to be so much of racing with us, and we're kind of in our own little world when it comes to all the track days.
I thought I had hit the handicapping jackpot of all time. She's like, "Oh, you can't bet that." I go, "He's 4-5. He looks like he can't lose." And she's like, no. And then he runs fifth or whatever. But
that is great.
Yeah.
You had it right there.
Dayton at the track, dangerous. Gino, what were some of your favorite days growing up going to the races in Southern California? Any big races you remember going to?
Oh, I mean, I was at Santa Anita all the time. One of the coolest things for me is I went to LaSalle High School up in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And since I had been going to the track for such a long time since I was young, by the time I got to 15, 16, I still look like I'm 15 now. But by the time I got to I was 15, 16 years old, they all thought I was much older because they'd seen me around already for 10, 12 years. So I was able to go up and play the races at the machines and bet. And so I would go off campus when I had off campus lunch. And I would, or I was on student council, so we'd have a meeting or something, and I was able to go to lunch a little early. So I would drive from Sierra Madre right down the way to Santa Anita, play a couple races at around 11:45, 12 when I got my lunch break, and I'd come back. And this was before, you know, we were even able to watch them. So I'd be calling. I'd go to the bathroom and I'd call on my phone and check the results on the line. And, you know, so every now and then I'd be screaming in the bathroom because something had hit and somebody would walk by and say, "What is going on in here? I just picked up $500. Yes, you know."
The result, I have flashbacks of the results line because my dad used to call it at 10 or 11 at night. He would work, swing shift. And so he would make his bets early in the day. And then I'd be getting ready to go to bed, and out front, I'd just hear, "Oh, shit." And you knew it meant that he was listening to Joe Withee read off the results on the Emerald Hotline.
You know, it was the same for me when I started right after I graduated high school. I was working as a waiter at Islands, which I loved. That was a great job over there. I worked as started from the very beginning as a host, busser, food expediter, takeout, server, bartender, and I would the best days I'd ever have, I'd make the most money and the most tips ever, or a day that I'd go in and I'd already have had a good day at the track, and I'd same thing, I'd be like checking the results in the back, I'd win, I'd come out with a big smile on my face, and then the next 4 or 5 hours at work, you're really relaxed, you know? Yeah. You're not stressing if somebody gives you an extra dollar or two on every table, and then they end up giving you a bunch more money. They can just feel that good energy from you. So I always laughed, and my buddy said, didn't you just make money earlier, and you just made the most of anyone here tonight? I said, dude, it's an energy thing. You know, they just feel that you're in a good mood, and you're just there's nothing like a good day when you win at the races. There really isn't. I mean, it can keep you glowing for a while.
One of my biggest hits of my career, I hit a pick four at Hollywood for like $7,800, and I hit the first two legs I hit before I went into work, and then the third and fourth legs, I had to wait till my lunch break at work, and I found out that I hit it, and I was working by myself, so it's like me in this office with nobody else in there. So I hit for almost $8,000, and I have to just sit there and like for four more hours and answer phones, and like it was right after college, and it was just so weird. Like there's nobody there to celebrate with. That's one of the weird things.
You wanted to share it with someone.
That's one of the weird things about betting from home now. Like with social media, you can at least kind of do that, but it's a weird thing to be at home and like screaming about a big win, and there's just nobody around.
I think my biggest win ever was one of my favorite bets. They used to be they were the Magna Pick Five.
Oh yeah, they keep saying it might come back, but
I know that I loved it for some reason. They would start they'd have the one race at Laurel or at Pimlico, and it'd go from Santa Anita to Gulfstream to Golden Gate, and there'd be two at either Santa Anita or Gulfstream.
Yep.
And I loved it. Like as soon as the entries came out on Wednesday, I would sit down for 2 or 3 days, and like that was one of my goals every week when they had it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to conquer it. And so one week I was alive going in, and it was going to pay. This was still my biggest score. Like 20, I was alive for like three horses, and the biggest one was going to pay $26,000. And it was Mike Smith on a horse named Amy Bell. And he opened up five lengths, and he probably won by eight. So it was the perfect way to close a ticket. You just never had a doubt. And I remember I was at the Front Runner at Santa Anita, and I'm just screaming as the horse is opening up. And most of the people there knew I was just from me being there. I hadn't done anything on PBG or been on anything yet, just from being there. People are looking like, you must have hit a good one. And I was smiling, and I ran over, and the first thing I thought in my head was, I gotta throw up right now. Yeah. My stomach starts spinning, so I start running to the bathroom, and one of the girls who lets you in with the hand stamp looked at me and was smiling, and I grabbed her and just shook her like as hard as I could, and she got scared a little bit, but I always laugh, and every time I see her at the track, she kind of smiles at me from that day. I gave her a little tip afterwards, and she was laughing. I said, sorry, I just made like $25,000 right there. I had to go to the bathroom and throw up a little bit.
At Emerald Downs, the turf club, there was a maitre d' guy named David there. I had hit a try for, I think, $2,000 or $3,000. And it was real crowded. And I remember I started having an anxiety attack. And so I kind of ran up the stairs, and there was a little couch right in the foyer. We were going into the turf club here. So I sat down, you know, doing my breathing exercises, trying to calm down. And he comes over. He's like, hey, man, are you all right? And I said, I'm having a panic attack. And he looks at me and goes, having a bad day at the races. And I looked at him. I go, David, this is me winning.
He goes,
I think you got a problem. But I was like, I think I'm past that, my friend. But it's funny.
I hate to see you losing if this is you winning. Yeah.
But it's weird. Like your body, like when big wins, like I always think about that with the lottery. Like if you find out you win $100 million, like how do you not feel like crippled, and how do you move?
Literally, I can remember a couple of my biggest ones, you know, anything that like is around in the 10,000 area. Mm-hmm. And especially when I was younger, it was like, okay, we win. Now I want to go out, like you said, with a bunch of my buddies or a bunch of friends. So I'd always tell a bunch of people, hey, okay, let's go out here. You know, drinks on me tonight. We'll have fun. And you go out somewhere. We'd always go out to like a nice restaurant too. And I couldn't even eat anything.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even eat. I'd be so nervous. I still couldn't eat for like a day or two. My stomach would still be spinning after those big wins. It's great. It's the feel, you know. We're sickos, but we love it. You know, we love it because there's nothing like that feeling when you put your heart and your soul and your blood and your sweat and your tears into, you know, one day of races, and you just feel like, I got it. I hit it today. Like, I beat the track. You know, today was my day. There's nothing like that feeling.
I go home on days like that. You know, when you'd hit a you know, a high four or five figure score, like I'd go home and I'd buy I'd have the form for the next day, of course, but like immediately in my head, I'm like, you know what? I can do this professionally. I'm good enough.
Yeah.
I said I can, like,
you start, those feelings are so great. You start going and those are the fun nights too, where it's like you can't sleep, but you're so excited, you're looking at the races for the next day, and you know you got a bunch of ammo, so your things are just spinning through your head. How you're going to play this? How you're going to do that? You gotta take yourself back a few steps and say, okay, breathe. You know, deep breath here. We can do this, but. You know, I'm definitely not one of those guys when they say act like you've been here before. I'm definitely not one of those guys because I've always acted like I think when you play the race as much as we do and you get your heart broken as much as we do, I think it's only right that when you win, you get plenty happy because it's just such an emotional roller coaster up and down. If you don't get happy with you win, when you win, then why are we even doing this, you know?
Gino Bucola joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. And now, was working in broadcasting and handicapping, was that always kind of a career goal, or did you kind of stumble into it? How did the whole process of working with TVG get started?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, it was always – I was just a big sports guy. Even in high school, I was kind of a – I was the commissioner of publicity, so I was the MC at every event when I was a senior. I just started kind of talking to host events, or I would, you know, set things up, and I just enjoyed it. It really felt fun to me. And sports was always, you know, I played growing up baseball, basketball, football. I wrestled. My dad was a wrestling coach himself. And so I did, you know, everything. So I knew the backgrounds. And I was always thinking maybe TV, radio, like something like that would be perfect for me. People tell me I talk too much and I don't shut up. Can you imagine if somebody paid me for that? Can you imagine if somebody paid me for that? No way. So I was, you know, when I was thinking of college, that was always what I was going to do, where I was going to do it. I always was a USC guy, and I didn't get into SC. I had really good grades in school. I got a scholarship to high school. I had a lot of extracurriculars, but it kind of bummed me out when I didn't get into SC. So I'm 18, I'm 19, and I'm at PCC, and I end up, you know, every day I'm going to the track. You know, I'm looking at the races. I'm really looking at the races. My dad's even like, man, you're looking at these races harder than I've ever looked at them in my life. You know, it's like... And to me, that was fun. And then I started talking to a counselor, and every time we would talk, she would say, you know, you just keep the races keep popping up with you. It just seems like I'm not trying to tell you anything, but I don't know if you really want to do this, maybe schooling for that or something in that direction is where you want to go. So I kept thinking about that. And my buddy and I at the PCC, he was involved in the radio department, so he created a sports talk show. So we would do the play-by-play show a couple times a week, which was a blast. We actually got Joe Talamo and Mike Smith on for interviews before I'd ever been at TVG or anything like that. And when Zenyatta was big, I think Joe came on to talk to us about Sydney's Candy, who was going to run into, who just won the Santa Anita Derby and who's going to be a major Derby contender. And it was always sports somehow. And I literally had a buddy who we played the races together. I knew him from Santa Anita a little bit. He was a producer over at TVG. And he said one day to me, hey, you know, I worked at TVG. Why don't you come by for a day, hang out with me over there? We can just play some races. I know you're a racing fan. I'll give you a tour. You can meet some of the guys. And I mean, to me, Matt Carruthers and Todd Strick, like, you guys are like rock stars. You know, I'm looking at, I'm 19, 20 now. At this point, I was just 22 years old. And I've been watching TVG probably every day since it was on. It was always on in the background of my house. Cause I followed who a lot of these guys said, and to me, they were always a really big deal. So it was so cool walking around and shaking everybody's hand and meeting them. And the day I was in there, it was always luck. You know, you always got to be at the right place at the right time. I put in a pick for a Gulfstream, and they weren't even showing the Gulfstream races, but we were watching them back behind the scenes, and it ended up hitting. I hit for like 3,500 that day. We were screaming in the back with me and my buddy and a couple of the producers, and one of the guys who was in charge of the schedule came over and said, hey, we need a producer's assistant over here. You know, it's nothing glamorous. You're going to just be getting a lot of information for producers. You're going to be running a lot of stuff for them, kind of cutting back tracks and all that. But to me, I was like, oh, my God, this is my end. Yeah. This is the perfect thing I've been waiting for forever. So a few days later, I was there. I was a PA. And so for my first 6 months or so, I worked Monday through Friday, or actually I worked Wednesday through Saturday, and I would come in and I'd cut backtracks at TVG. I'd help set up videos. I'd get any kind of footage or B-roll of trainers or still shots of different things, or, you know, whatever any producer or director needed for their show. They'd send me an email, and I was running around doing it, and it was really easy for me because a lot of the people who came into TVG as PAs, they came in from the television or the movie
industry. World, yeah.
And they didn't really know racing. So they had to learn, like, what are you looking for in a backtrack? You know, they had to learn a lot of things that were much more difficult than for me learning what button do I press or, you know, how to do this or that. So for me, it was always really nice because sometimes the researchers would be doing their backtracks and I would tell them, hey, like, I can do the backtracks. You don't even need to cut. You know, I know what I'm looking for. So I would handicap the race. I'd find two or three horses who got in some trouble or whose backtrack was, you know, worth viewing. And so it was pretty quickly that I was just trying, like, I was trying really hard. If you guys ever need anyone, you know, to talk or this or that. And yeah. they were doing the greatest show of all time, Gate Crashers. And that's how I got my one of my first appearances on TV. They just asked me who I thought was going to win one day, and I gave out a misremember to win the big cap. That was, like, the first horse I ever gave out, and I was yelling and screaming. I think Todd Shrupp called me Adam Morrison. My hair was down to my shoulders.
And you had the long cheesy mustache?
Long, curly, and I had a big mustache, too. Oh, I mean, it was the worst mustache ever, and I looked so much like Adam Morrison. I was laughing when he said that, too. It was really great.
Oh, man. Yeah, Gino Bacola joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. And so, you know, you transitioned to becoming, you know, full-time analyst and host with TVG. Did you do any kind of, you know, broadcasting coursework, or were there certain guys you followed or tried to emulate? Because, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, had years of experience doing on-cam work before coming to TVG.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was a good fit for me always. But I think one of the first times I went on, it's something I've been doing my whole life too. I'd be bringing people to the races, you know, because racing's such a niche sport that a lot of your friends, when they hear about it, they're really interested in it. You know, people don't necessarily don't know the track, don't want to go every day, but they love to go on the big days or the weekends or, you know, when there's something big going on. And so I was always bringing people to the track, explaining it to them, trying to help them play the races, show them how to look at the form or the program. And so it was always really natural for me. And then the real big key for me was the late double. When they did that show, the whole premise was, let's get a bunch of young people in for 1 hour a week. We'll get, you know, we'll try to aim for a young crowd, do something a little bit different. The show had really mixed reviews. Like, some people thought it was cool. A lot of other people were just hilariously against it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that was what helped me, because I was able to come on, and I think the first we would do I was Gino the intern at that point, which is funny because I was never really an intern. I always laughed. I always laughed at that.
That's like a Howard Stern thing. Like, he always had, you know, Scott the intern or Mike the intern, and yeah,
that could be like my wrestling name too, right? Like, Gino the intern. I could just be the guy that comes around and, like, cheats in all the matches, helps the Miz win or whatever.
Or then finally, or you're like just kind of running all their little, you know, stupid errands, and then finally. But then finally you snap and turn heel.
I get my comeuppance. Exactly. Yeah.
We got it all planned out. Gino Bacola joining us. You know, you mentioned the folks on the Daily Double who were critical. You know, you were, you know, young guy, and still are, but when you were at TVG, how did you, because there's always going to be criticism when you're broadcasting. How did you deal with that? Did you take it to heart, or were you able to just kind of say, you know, some people are going to hate me?
I'll tell you, my mom really took it to heart. You learn when you get on TV or on the radio, especially as Twitter in the last years has gotten. There's so much negative out there. I mean, if you can just be smart and kind of weed through it and find people that are just trying to get a rise out of you. But I've definitely gotten into it with a lot of people on Facebook or on Twitter, especially when people say something that is just wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I could care less if you say that my picks stink, or a horse I gave out ran last, or anything like that. But when you just say things that are factually inaccurate, those were the things that always would kind of rile me up and get under my skin. And I definitely, at the very beginning, was, you know, really had a chip on my shoulder. And I think I still do. And the one thing I always want to make sure is, because I'm young, and I know because I look really young, in a world where it's a lot of older people who have been involved for a long time, I got to make sure I'm really prepared, and I have to be overly prepared, and I got to make sure that every time I have a conversation with someone on the air or off the air, that I know what I'm talking about, and I've looked at the races, and I've looked at the horses, and I know the storylines, and I know what's behind the scenes. And I always felt like, you know, when you study for a test and you go in before and you just know, like, I'm going to do well today. There's nothing like feeling like that before a shift too. I love that feeling. And even if I lose throughout the day, I never feel like I lose because I was underprepared. I'm a dork now. I don't do much or go out very often. You know, I literally will sit at home And nowadays, I really sink my teeth into Saturday and Sunday for Elite Racing Network. And Wednesday, when those entries come out, I mean, I'm Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, 4 or 5 hours a night. I'm watching at least 100 to a couple hundred replays per weekend for the multiple cards that I'm looking at. It's just, for me, that's what I have to do. I'm younger, so I have to outwork these people because I'm not going to just know more than them off the top of my head.
You know, I think a lot of racing fans were surprised when you left TVG because I always thought you'd kind of be one of those guys that was there forever because you started there. What was leaving that like? Because, you know, I think a lot of people, the reaction was pretty big when you left, at least online.
You know what? I couldn't believe it. Really, it made me really feel good. There was a lot of people who were really thankful and were just really appreciative and just kind of curious what was happening, where I was going, and you know, there wasn't really one thing in particular. It just new. It's like anything when a new coach or new management comes into a new team, they kind of have their players or their people in mind. And I got along very, very well with Tony Alavato, who was one of the old guard at TVG. He kind of started help putting me in really good spots. And then when he left, things changed a little bit for me. And, you know, I was really frustrated. I kept it just seemed like my position kind of started slipping a little bit. A lot of the shifts, I was at Hollywood Park for doing the simulcast the last couple meets. Mm-hmm. I got to do all the reporting at Hollywood daily. Then I was out at Del Mar doing the simulcast meet. I was down at Del Mar daily, and then it kind of changed to where I was in the studio all the time, and I was trying to find out, trying to ask if I could improve my position, and it just didn't seem like I had much of an upward trajectory anymore. And I was working on it. I was trying really hard, and it got to the point where I kind of felt like that dream girl that you have when you're younger and you're in love with her, and then you get with her and you finally get to the point where it's like I really put this high up on a pedestal when I was young, and maybe it's not as much as I thought. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the place at all. It's just for me, it started feeling I was just frustrated. I didn't feel like I was on the upswing, and I can't feel like I'm running in place. I have to feel like I'm moving upward somewhere. And truth be told, there was no Elite Racing Network in the works. There was not much in the works. It was just I felt like I wasn't as happy. I've always been a pretty happy, energetic person. And the last year and a half there, I just started feeling like I was doing a lot of work and it wasn't really helping me much. And it was just frustrating after a little while. And so I said, you know what? They were really good to me. I didn't want to get on bad terms with anyone. Yeah. And I could kind of feel myself getting frustrated. So I said, this is a perfect time for me to, I'm 28. I don't have a wife or kids or anyone who's depending on me. Now is the time for me to kind of find something, really what I want to do, really get happy. And then, you know, then the rest of my life, I'll worry about, you know, different things then, but I have to be the kind of person who gets up and loves what they're doing. And for, you know, 4 years at TVG, I couldn't believe that I was doing that. I was so excited. And it just kind of flipped, and I could feel the energy kind of a little bit different for me. So I said, you know what? Let's make a change. We'll figure something else out. And it was, I was doing a lot of wrestling ring announcing for a few months, actually. Yeah. I was, for some of the indie organizations, Quintessential Pro Wrestling. I did one for, AIS Wrestling out here. And I was just having fun. I was interviewing in a couple different places, just taking meetings with people, trying to find something that fit for me. And it was like December when the guys called me from, actually, Aaron Grider initially was the one who called me and said, a couple of my friends are putting together a racing kind of streaming network, and they wanted to talk to you. They were interested in you know, putting you as, you know, one of the analysts in there. And I said, sure, give me a call. And this was early December. And I mean, I'd never met Louis Masri. I'd never met Danny Wolf. I'd never had an actual conversation with Corey Black. Those are the three guys I work with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they called me, and the first conversation I could tell that we kind of saw things the same way. It was just they love to play the races, they love to gamble, they just wanted to help people get the best information possible. And I love more than anything helping someone find a 5-to-1 shot or a 10-to-1 shot that they wouldn't have found, and they come back and tell me, Gino, I put that horse in my ticket. Or even if it's, you know, no matter if it's $2 or $2,000, it's all relative for everyone different. I bet $2 on that horse, or I hit the thing because of you. That makes me feel as good as, you know, as winning on my own. And So I was really, really excited when they mentioned Elite Racing Network, because it sounded like something I'd be really into.
Yeah, I really appreciate your candor on that whole TVG situation, because I my experience was kind of similar this last year when I left Louisiana Downs. It was just personally, it just wasn't a good move for me to move far away, and I just never felt at home at the track there. And a lot of people were like, you know, why would you leave? And da 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 da. And you know, in the end, I guess, I mean, you kind of just have to do what you trust in your gut, you know. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of felt it's a great. I mean, as far as racing is concerned, I mean, it's one of the best gigs out there to be able to work 5 days a week on TV. Like, and I have so many friends over there. I absolutely love. I mean, I learned so much from guys like Matt Carruthers and Todd Trump and Mike Joyce and Dave Weaver, is a good buddy of mine. He's a sicko. We play, you know, DraftKings and fantasy all the time, and we're texting back and forth. And, you know, and I love Caleb and Tom and Joaquin. They're great. And, you know, I have so many friends over there. Rich Perloff, I learn, like, literally I learn things from him when he's handicapping the races. I'm going, oh, my gosh, like, he's just finding things in these conditions that I never would have looked at. And it was, like you said, you get a feeling where – you got to just do what is best for yourself. And it's so many people were saying, why are you going? Or I can't believe you would leave. And, you know, but most, the one thing that I was actually surprised about, because we were talking about all the negative stuff on social media. That was one day where I got like no negative. And there was so many people that even said, you know what? I don't like you a lot, but I respect you, which I think those are the best compliments.
Sometimes
like, I love it when somebody says that, like, I don't always, you know, do everything you say, but I always appreciate that you put the work in. And that's all I ever want about myself, anyone to say, is, oh, that guy put the time and the effort in.
Gino Bucola joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. So, Gino, where can folks find you and Elite Racing Network?
We are EliteRacingNetwork.com. We come on every Saturday, Sunday, 8:30 a.m. Pacific time. And what's cool is we're really interactive, too. That's one of the things that I love doing on TVG and now. So I love interacting with the people on Twitter, on Facebook. You can send us an emails. If you have any questions for our hosts, our the analysts, or any handicappers, or even anyone that we're going to interview, you can send us questions. There's a tab right under our live stream, and we put up our selections, too. So I know a lot of people don't like to listen or watch, but sometimes people just want to see what everybody else played and just look through their selections. So if you subscribe to our network, we've been free so far. Every week we will tweet out or we'll send out different promo codes. So you can just log in the promo code and you can watch our broadcast for free. And that's our goal. We want to try to keep it for free. We know, the one thing that I will say is a lot of the professional handicappers or people who sell their picks, it's probably 10 or 20 bucks a day. And at Elite, we're giving you right now for free, you know, we're giving you a bunch of different handicappers, some interviews, and we'll go through all the races all day long. So it's just good information. Even if you are the type of person who has a big ego, like we all do in racing, and you don't like to play other people's picks, it's just good info. Maybe you'll hear something about a horse you like working, positive or negative, or it's something that you wouldn't have heard somewhere else. And, yeah, you definitely want to check it out. You can also get me on Twitter. I'm at It's Me, Gino B.
Perfect. Well, Gino, I really appreciate your time. I know they're probably getting ready for the main event at Fastlane, but we'll let you go. Before I let you go, though, what do you make about Triple H being the champion?
You know, I understand why some people are frustrated about it, because he's the CEO, COO, and it's Vince's son-in-law, and he was, you know, he's not even a full-time wrestler anymore. I just think that it was a timing thing. They got so struck down by injuries all at one time. I mean, from Seth Rollins, even Sting was wrestling against Rollins. He gets hurt. John Cena gets hurt. You have so many of their top guys in just a short window get hurt. I think a lot of their plans went out the window, and they really had to call audible and change things up for Plan B. So I don't see him being the champ for a long time, but I do think it's pretty funny how Triple H – they're trolling the fans, you know. They know what people on Twitter are saying, and they know what those people are frustrated with, and they literally will do that just to frustrate you more. And it is great as a wrestling fan when people are booing because they're genuinely mad. It's great when you feel people getting into it passionately.
That's what happened for me on the Royal Rumble. When he won, I remember just going on Twitter and being like, this is so stupid. You knew he was going to win. And then I realized, I go, I just took the bait, hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, me too. I mean, I was doing the whole time with the Daniel Bryan storyline a couple years back. I was going, how has he not won yet? What is he doing? And I'm thinking, gosh, they got me. They got me. It's, you know, and I've been watching this for since as long as I can remember. So I want to say I appreciate you also coming on a couple weeks back, and we had a blast talking with you from the NHC, and you know, we'd love to have you on any time with us. I enjoy talking to you, man. You have a great sense of humor, and you are you are definitely my favorite follow on Twitter, especially the last few years with the Beamy Awards.
Oh, the Beamy, Gino, the Beamy Awards got out of hand. Like, they trended nationally this year. They were the number one trending topic in Louisville and Lexington. This is a stupid fake award show I do in my boxer shorts from my bedroom.
I can promise you that the last 2 years, I literally planned my whole like evening and weekend around that. I wanted to make sure that I was sitting down at a computer, just able to keep refreshing my Twitter with nothing else going on while the Beamy Awards were happening.
I had Marty McGee on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he had won a Beamy for best hair. And he told me he was at Gulfstream plugging in a bet, and a random teller he'd never met went, "I want to congratulate you on your Beamy. It's well-deserved."
I mean, Pollock was tweeting about the Beanies are better than the Eclipse Awards, and you were getting great response. The best of the responses, like Julian Lepereau responded about one of the rides. Oh, that was just great. I was dying.
It's good
times. So funny.
All right, Gino. Well, I could sit and talk with you all night, so we'll definitely have you on again sometime soon. You can find Gino at Elite Racing Network or on Twitter at It's Me, Gino B. Gino Bukola, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Jason. Have a nice one, buddy.
All right, Gino Bukola joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. We'll be right back after this short timeout. You are in the bar.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
All right, so my thanks to Gino Bukola for joining us. A lot of fun talking to Gino. I'm a Gino fan. He's just a cool dude, so check him out on Elite Racing Network. And we got a busy week of shows planned for you. New episodes of The Barn are usually put up each morning about 6 o'clock a.m. Pacific. And whenever I roll out of the hay, I fire the show up for the day. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find all the shows I post on Twitter at Beamy Awards, BEEMIEAWARDS. You can find us on Twitter at BetAmerica, or visit us, BetAmerica.com, or BetAmerica.com/extra for a lot of interesting news and notes and articles from guest analysts and much more excitement. For the entire Bet America team. Don't forget to check out our promotions calendar. Also, so many great promotions going on at Bet America, including that Kentucky Derby prep promotion, which I believe this week goes to the Fountain of Youth Stakes down at Gulfstream Park. So we got a busy week ahead, though. Lots of great guests and lots of fun shows. We got a fun, I think tomorrow's song parody might be the one that eclipses all of them. We've had some song parodies that have gotten very popular amongst the listeners. I think tomorrow's is the I try not to toot my own horn, but I was even cracking up listening to this one. So I'll tease you that for tomorrow. But everybody have a great rest of your Monday, and we look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow here at the Bet America Radio Network. Good night.